Welcome to Ubuntu Voltage. Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Ubuntu podcast. This week, we're reviewing the new Dell XPS 13. We've got some mystery love, and we'll go over your feedback. My name's Stuart Langridge, and joining me this week are...
You say our names.
Oh, do I?
Yeah.
Oh, joining me this week are Alan. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Stuart.
Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Stuart.
And Martin. Hello, Martin.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
Say I'm in trouble now. It doesn't say that.
You're right. And we should fix that. And the person who wrote that has been fired.
Right. Oh. Right. So I'll file
I'm
going to
enjoy my last appearance on the Ubuntu podcast then.
I'll file a bug against the podcast. Meanwhile, what have you been up to recently, Alan?
I can't read this without mispronouncing it now. I saw a video on Pi Moroni have a little channel. Pi Moroni are the people who sell pies, Raspberry Pis and kits and stuff. And I saw a video and they promoted a little device. And the person who designed the device and was in the video is actually a contributor to the Ubuntu project, a guy called Alistair Buxton. And I thought, I know that guy. And, oh my gosh, that thing is a thing that I want. And so I bought a bunch of them. And they are a little board that you solder onto a Raspberry Pi Zero. And it has a USB plug on one side. And it has the board kind of stretches underneath the Raspberry Pi Zero and reaches a few pads on the bottom of the Pi Zero. And when you solder it, there's only like 8 pieces of soldering to do. It's really, really tiny and really easy. No component, well, one component, the USB plug, and that's it. But you solder it onto your Pi, and as soon as you've done that, you can then plug the Pi into a computer, and it's powered from the computer, so you don't need any cables whatsoever. It makes it a completely cableless Raspberry Pi Zero, and it's so brilliant.
Does this also bridge the network over USB so you can SSH in and so on?
And you can even boot the Raspberry Pi Zero over USB and not have an SD card in it.
Wow, that is clever.
Yeah.
So you can attach this to USB header pins on some other device.
What?
So you've exposed what a USB port by attaching this thing.
Yes,
so
you solder it.
Has a USB port on the bottom.
Yeah.
But this kind of moves that to the end and uses a USB-A plug on the end. And it provides you, it supplies a USB-A plug male that you stick into a computer. And then that gives the Pi Zero its power. Or you could just plug it into a charger or anything that's got a USB port on it and give it power and it will boot the thing up. It's just really clean, really nicely done. And unfortunately, they're out of stock.
I saw a really hacky version of this, like, not long after the Zero was released, where someone had just, like, bodged it together with a couple of wires and a plug, like, ripped off something else. But this is a really, like, neat packaging of the same idea.
I did exactly that. I bodged it with some wires that with a USB cable I'd cut off of something else. And this is just so much more elegant. I bought 4 of them, and I've done this to all of my Raspberry Pi Zeros. And now I've got another Raspberry Pi Zero that I want to do this to, and they don't have any in stock. So I've ticked the little please tell me when they're in stock button. But it's really, really cool. You should take a look if you've got any Pi Zeros. It really makes
sense. And how's it pronounced again?
It's called a Zero Stem. But apparently it looks like Zerostom, which is some kind of cream or something, I'd imagine.
I'm in trouble again for calling it a Zerostom because I didn't know what it was. Just so I understand this correctly, I can just plug it into something like a USB hub, yes?
Yes.
And it draws power from that. So it can be powered off of not a USB port. It doesn't need one of the magic charging ports or anything like that.
And
if I do that, has it got to be connected to a real computer in order to get on the network? Presumably, yes.
Because the Raspberry Pi W has Wi-Fi. So you could plug it into a computer, SSH over the connection, set it all up, so that it connects to your Wi-Fi, unplug it from your computer, and then just plug it into a charger, and it will connect to your Wi-Fi.
Hang on. So this is a Pi Zero with Wi-Fi, which can be powered off of its own USB port.
It can be powered from...
From the Zero Stem thing, yes.
Yes.
Why doesn't the Raspberry Pi do this generally?
probably cost.
Because this is surely the best idea ever, right?
It's pretty flipping awesome, is what I think. Yes. Anyway, that's what I've been doing. Thank you for asking.
Awesome. And now we are going to do a review of the Dell XPS 13. Alan has had one to play with for a few weeks, and he's going to tell us all about it.
I'm going to tell you all about it right now. I got this from the wonderful Barton George, who contacted someone in the UK, their brand management people, who sent it to me. It arrived in at my house in a cardboard box. Inside the box was the Dell and a power brick, and that was it. And a power cable. That was pretty much it. Open the box, turn it on, use it like anyone would. It looks like it's been used by other people. So there was a couple of dinks in it, and it was a little bit bent, where I think probably another journalist has grabbed hold of it and given it the twist test and actually twisted it. So it doesn't sit flat on a desk. But I would imagine that is not indicative of a brand new one that you would get from Dell. But I thought I'd point it out because it was bent. So the specs of this thing, I'll talk about the hardware first, and yeah, feel free to just like jump in and ask me any questions. The one I had was an i5, 2.5 gigahertz, 8 gig RAM, 256 gig SSD, Atheros wireless, 1080p matte screen, non-touch, had an SD slot. It had one of those combined headphone ports, so only a single connector, Courage port. Two USB 3s, one on each side, one USB-C. Mine had a USB keyboard layout, a 60 watt hour battery, and that claimed 10 hours battery life when I first booted it up.
Right. And what did it actually give you?
It depended on what I was doing, but anywhere between 4.5 and 8 hours. Hours. I was doing stuff with it. It was never sat idle for 10 hours. You know, it would be doing stuff.
That's not too bad, but it's not fabulous, right, for a brand new laptop.
Well, I was doing stuff, and when I'm doing stuff, I'm doing stuff like having Chrome open with 1,000 tabs, and I'm running Snapcraft, which is doing CMake and building stuff. So I'm using it like pretty aggressively. I'm not sitting there scrolling up and down through Facebook. I'm actually using it.
Okay, fair play. Is it? You said it's got USB-C, but it's not powered by USB-C, right?
No, it's got the charger port is a round connector, typical like power connector, with a little light on the cable, on the connector itself, not on the laptop. So you know when it's got power, when you know it's plugged in the wall because the light on the cable turns on. The charger was a 45 watt charger, so it's quite small, compact, and would fit in a bag really, really nicely. So the laptop itself felt really nice and robust. It felt really nice to hold. The metal outside was nice in the hand. The hinge mechanism was fairly robust. I didn't feel like it was flapping around. It didn't feel loose. It felt like whichever position I put it to, it stayed there. Had good visibility on the screen all around. It was good.
It can be charged and powered over USB-C, but you need to order a aftermarket adapter from Dell for that.
Right, so I didn't think have a charger for that.
Yeah, yeah. They do sell a 30-watt USB-C charger.
Right, so okay.
When I powered it on, it shipped with a relatively up-to-date 1604 install. Obviously, remember, this is a review unit. It's not a brand new one. So they'd already reset. They'd already set the password on it and, you know, configured it. So when I opened the lid, it just, you know, opened to the desktop. It auto-logged in and everything. But it didn't have the latest hardware enablement stack on there. So it was a slightly older image, but it was 1604 and I could update it and get all the latest crack if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. Some interesting things I noted about it. It has a Dell PPA enabled by default. I've never bought a Dell, so this was new and interesting to me, but it may be old news to all of you. Had a Dell PPA enabled, which had some interesting things in it, like different build of network manager and a few other bits and bobs for the hardware. The Windows key doesn't work out of the box. So if you press the Windows key, you don't get the dash opening, which is a bit weird in Unity.
Okay. That's really weird. So how do you open the dash, or do you have to mess around with
the mouse
key
up to the top left hand corner of the screen and click on the big friendly button?
Yeah. Wow, it's like opening the dash in the Middle Ages, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. It ships.
But can you actually like fix that and
yes,
get it working?
There is a if you Google for it, you'll find out the reason why, and well, you won't find out the reason why. You'll find out that they can't do anything about that, and the package that you need to remove and the fiddly thing you need to tweak to make it work.
Why can't they do anything about that?
I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay.
So it ships with Chromium and Chrome installed by default and no Firefox, which I thought was interesting. Mm. Chromium, no Firefox. When I first turned it on, actually, it said initially 9 hours battery life. And then after the fan spun up for a bit and it was a bit busy, it went down to 4.5 hours left. And then eventually when the fan span down, it extended back up to 7 hours. So I think 9 hours is when the laptop is doing absolutely nothing battery life. So
since you mentioned the fans, mm-hmm. how hot and noisy does it get when you're using it?
It can get a little warm when it's doing like busy stuff, but not like outrageously burn your britches kind of warm. Yeah. It's it's there. And the fan can be a bit, it's one of those fans that's kind of like, like a noise, there's different noises, and it feels like air being blown through a very small hole. You know, it's got a very notable sound to it. One thing that people did ask me is, does it have coil whine? And I didn't notice any coil whine on this one. And I know that's been a problem that's plagued Dells for a long time. It's like this high pitched whine that people have complained about. And this one, I didn't have any coil whine on. So that's good, I guess.
Right. So, what the answer to this question should be, nothing at all, because it's a laptop bought from Dell with their installation of Ubuntu on it. But what didn't work? Apart from the super key. Things like high DPI worked fine. Suspend and resume works fine.
It's a 1080p screen, so there's no IDPI.
Oh, really?
So on that point, I own the previous model. So Alan's reviewing the 9360, which has the Gaby Lake processor, and I've got the 9350 with the Skylake processor. And we used the model that Alan had to make a restore image on a USB stick, and I installed that on my machine, which is high DPI. And when you install that, it does the right thing in terms of doing the pixel double scaling on the OEM config the first boot and when you log into the desktop the first time.
Okay.
So I'm going to say if you get a high DPI model, it will do the right thing out of the box.
Okay. And Bluetooth works and the Wi-Fi works properly.
Worked.
And
yep.
Right, did you hibernate it?
Sorry?
Did you hibernate it?
I didn't hibernate. I shut the lid, which is what I usually do, because that's what normal people do. And when I shut the lid, it stopped working and the light flashed to say it's gone to sleep. Whatever like technical term you want for that.
Suspend.
It went to sleep and I opened the lid up and it carried on working again. So yes, it operated as a normal user would expect a laptop to do when you shut the lid. Yes.
Okay.
Interestingly, sorry, Stuart, I'll just mention one more thing. Martin mentioned the recovery thing. That was interesting in that it comes with a Dell recovery tool pre-installed. And the first time you boot up, if you do a clean install, the first time you boot up, it says, hey, do you want to make a recovery USB stick? And unlike, you know, some other inferior operating systems where you get an opportunity to do that once and then goodbye, with this, you can do that any time because the recovery stuff is still there and it's always there. And you could just rerun the Dell thing and remake a USB key as many times as you like. Also, it's free software. So, you know, you can keep making them as many times as you like, as Martin did for his other Dell. But the button, second button in that same tool is reboot and recover, like reset to factory default. And I did that a couple of times just to test the process and it worked flawlessly. It reboots a couple of times, does a bit of monkeying about and then plays you the Dell video of how awesome Ubuntu is. and you're back into a very clean install. So that was, I was really impressed with that. And I feel like that's something that all Ubuntu and in general, all Linux machines should have, is this recovery system that you can just press a button and reset back to factory. It was just a really, really pleasant experience. I really enjoyed that.
Now that recovery system and also making the own USB stick. So Stuart sends me ideas every so often. He says, you should do this in Ubuntu Mate. And I don't know if you remember, Stuart, but a while ago you said, you should have a thing where I can just make an image of the operating system that I'm running and then give it to a mate and they can then, you know, install
that. That's sort of what I asked for, but yes.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what this, you know, recovery image creator is with the Dell. You know, you can just click a button, stick a USB stick in it, and you have a bootable install medium ready to go. Although this is obviously specific to Dell.
Yeah, and it has their PPA and their disabled Windows key and all that. Yeah. So in daily use, it feels really fast. Like when I was building stuff, it actually felt faster than my current laptop, which is 1 year old. And the fan did spin up on heavy load, but not too badly. It felt like a premium laptop. The keyboard doesn't have a huge amount of travel, but I didn't have a terrific problem typing on it. I did find that because it's 13-inch and it's quite a cramped is the wrong word. It's compact as a laptop goes. It's like 13-inch edge to edge, and there's a tiny bezel, tiny, tiny, tiny bezel. So you have the little webcam down the bottom looking up your nose, which is unfortunate. But because of that, it felt, I sometimes felt like I was hunched over it a little bit. It felt a bit cozy.
I'd agree with that.
I did find there was a bit of flicker in Chrome in websites. And I also see that on my ThinkPad. And I think this, we mentioned last week about the Mazer update. I'm hoping that Mazer update fixed some of that flicker and stuff.
Yeah, it could well do.
It has a function key that allows you to flip the mode of the actual function keys, F1 through F12. It's got an FN key in the bottom left.
Yeah.
And weirdly, it toggles, but doesn't have any way of telling you which way it's toggled. My ThinkPad has a light on it. So if I press the function key, it's either in function key mode or like media keys mode. And I know which mode it's in on my ThinkPad because it's got a light on it. Mm. But on the Dell, there's no light. So you have to like flip it into a mode and then like choose which one you're going to be in and then remember that.
So it's not a modifier key like control or shift. It's like caps lock.
It is. It is a modifier key. If you hold it down and tap a function key, it will change that function key that one time. But if you press it on its own and let go, it toggles. So you can switch the mode of the function keys.
Oh, so it's like caps lock and shift combined?
Yes. It's like a typewriter shift.
Yeah, yes. That's weird.
It's pretty funky, but that's the same as my ThinkPad, but my ThinkPad has a light on, and this one doesn't.
You would think you put a light on it, yeah. How many taps does the touchpad support?
I don't know.
That's an interesting question, because there's what the hardware can do and what the operating system will do, which is two finger tap, but the hardware is capable of three.
Right, but we're not using the proper. We're still using the Synaptics PS2 stuff, are we? Okay.
Yes. No. It's got two finger tap support and stuff like that, and you know, two finger scrolling and two fingers down for page scrolling and all of that sort of thing. But it doesn't have three finger, and it doesn't have gestures because of the OS that's being used.
So I also used Spotify to test the audio. And I played a few tracks, a few of my favourite tracks. Sparks, This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us. XTC, Making Plans for Nigel. And Jean-Michel Jarre, Equinox Part 5. And I found the speakers were laptop speakers.
right.
Not a lot of low end. They could be a bit harsh if you turn it up too much. Okay for background music. Not really great for rocking out. Good enough, not terrible. Jean-Michel Jarre sounded excellent. I had to turn it down a bit because it was a bit too loud in the mid-range. But, you know, it's okay for background music, okay for hangouts, okay for calls, that kind of stuff. And watching the odd YouTube. I had it watching, playing YouTube videos full screen for a while. And it was perfectly fine for that. I just wouldn't crank it up to the top because it got a bit harsh for my ears.
Right. On the power cable, the plug at the end that actually plugs into the laptop, is it a right angle or is it straight?
It's straight.
Okay.
It's a straight cable. And it comes in on the left at the back. On the left-hand side.
Oh, right. Not in the back of the machine.
Not at the back. It's the last connector on the left-hand side.
Okay.
I was going to say, did you have the opportunity to boot a completely free proprietary blob absent OS and see what worked and what didn't?
I downloaded Triskel, two different versions of Triskel, and neither of them would boot. So I gave up. I wasn't willing to investigate that too hard, but I did download two different versions, put it on a USB stick, and it just black screen, didn't get anywhere. So I was like, screw that. I installed Steam and I tried a bit of gaming. I did it by installing Steam from the repo. I just did apt install Steam, launched it, and it did its usual Steam update thing. No issues at all installing Steam itself. It just installed. I logged into Steam, installed a bunch of games, including Portal 2, Mini Metro, Goat Simulator, and a couple of others. Talos Principle. I think it's called Talos Principle. Mini Metro, which is one of my favorite games, played perfectly. It's one of those casual games you can play. It's not demanding, play perfectly. Goat Simulator was playing at about 20 frames a second at 720p. And the fans burn up a lot. Yeah. So that wasn't great. So it's not a gaming laptop, obviously. Talos Principle launched. It gave me 30 frames a second at 1080p. It looked beautiful on that screen.
That's quite amazing.
That's really interesting, considering the problems I had on
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Was this with the updated Mesa?
No, this is all out of the box 1604.
Okay, so based on Mark's experience, that could improve them with the newer versions of Mesa, potentially.
Possibly. Mm. Yeah. Interestingly, while I was in Talos, I wanted to take a screenshot. So I pressed the screenshot button and it locked up. And I alt-tabbed out and found that there was a GPU crash in DMessage. So, yeah. So it was a little bit flaky there.
So you are a long-time ThinkPad user and lover.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about this laptop, having used it for a couple of weeks?
When I gave it back, it turns out the brand company who loaned us the laptop are actually in the same building as Canonical in London. So when I was in Canonical, I emailed the guy and said, hey, I'm in the office and I've got the laptop and the box with me. Do you want it back? And, you know, I had 30 seconds to talk to the guy in the corridor as I handed the laptop back. And he said, what did you think of it? And, you know, if I was in an elevator with someone who said, that looks like a nice laptop, you know, would you buy it? Unquestionably, yes, definitely.
Really?
It's a fantastic laptop, yes.
And do you know what the price would be on the spec that you had?
I don't, unfortunately, no. We can look it up and try and stick it in the show notes, but I don't know off the top of my head. The only thing that would hold me back really is the whole nipple thing. I'm not a fan of trackpads, but you know what? For that laptop, I'd get over it. I really would. Because it was a lovely laptop.
It is genuinely beautiful. Having held one, it's just, you just think, oh, it's so nice. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to shill something else. those of you who have heard me talk before may be aware that I'm on another podcast.
There are other podcasts?
There are other podcasts.
Shot of Jack.
it is sadly neither Shot of Jack nor Lug Radio. I do a podcast called Bad Voltage with a couple of other people. And a couple of weeks ago, we did a live show in California. And Dell have given us one of these laptops to give away. Now, the downside of this is you have to be in the US, for which we apologise. But if you go to badvoltage.org/fruit, you can enter the competition that we've currently got running. As you listen to this show, you'll have about 2 days or something.
When does it expire?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's going to be pretty soon after this show comes out. So, okay. If it's going to be slightly before that, then I will make it slightly after that. So if you listen to this show the day it comes out or a day after, so go to badvoltage.org/fruit, and there are the instructions for the competition. You get to watch our live show, count up all the times we mention fruit, and then send us the list. If you're in the US and you get all the fruit and we draw your name out of the hat, you win one of these laptops, and they are super nice.
Awesome.
So But owning one of these, or the earlier model, I would say definitely enter that competition, because if you win, you're going to get a stellar machine for not much effort and having a bit of fun acquiring.
Well, you do have to sit through an episode of Bad Voltage.
Well, there is that, but then of course you can always listen to another episode of Ubuntu podcast to get over it.
Oh yeah.
If you love the command line as much as we do, send us a command that will blow our minds, and we might even mention it on the show. Send your command line love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
So recently, I reviewed a Dell XPS laptop. And one of the things that I used to measure how awesome it was I used a benchmarking tool called Phoronix Test Suite. And I wanted to test a whole load of stuff. I didn't want to test one thing and then test another thing. I wanted it to just test a ton of features of the laptop. And so I Googled a bit and I figured out the commands that I needed to run. And this command I love is you install Phoronix Test Suite, which you can get from their website. And if you run Phoronix Test Suite and then the parameter is batch setup with a hyphen between it, it'll ask you a bunch of questions, and you can tell it that you want to upload the results so you can make them publicly available so other people can compare your laptop to theirs and that kind of stuff. And one of the questions is, do you want it to pause between each test? So you can say no, so you can leave it to run all these tests in a batch, and it will play a bunch of games, and it will do a load of mathematical algorithms and computational tasks and benchmark and time them, and then create a report and upload it to the Phoronix open benchmarking whatever website. So yeah, you run Phoronix Test Suite batch setup, and then you run Phoronix Test Suite, and then the benchmark you want to run is batch benchmark. And I did one called PTS, which stands for Phoronix Test Suite, PTS/universe, and that will run for a long time. The Dell took around 3 hours to run this test.
Wow.
And that includes the time it took to download, because it's downloading a bunch of games and so other software that it's going to run. So it takes a long time to download that kind of stuff over my rubbish Wi-Fi. But then it ran all the tests. And so you could run that same set of tests on multiple machines and compare them. And it's quite a nice little tool.
So if we'd have had the machine for a bit longer, we could have run it twice, one with the new Mesa libraries, and actually done a comparison and seen what the improvement was going to be.
Yes, we could have done that, but we didn't.
We didn't, but you know, it's a good example of how it could be used. Sorry, Stuart.
Since you did that, it would have uploaded your stats and you get to compare them to other people's laptops.
Yes.
Roughly, how did it do against contemporary laptops? Oh, you didn't?
I didn't compare it. I just uploaded them for reference. If other people want to do that, we'll put the link to the stats that I generated on that specific laptop that I got, and you can compare them to other devices. But we'll put the link in the show notes so other people can do that. Cool.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
Okay, and now it is time for the feedback. Matthew Boone emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org.
I have a question for which Google is unable to find me an answer. What are the differences, if any, between installing an Ubuntu flavour and simply installing the desktop environment from a vanilla installation of Ubuntu? I'm really settled into my system now, and I'd kind of like to just seamlessly move onto Mate or Budgie should the need arise. So this is where you can, if you've got default vanilla Ubuntu installed, you can do something like apt install budgie-desktop or mate-desktop, and you should have all of the packages which would come with Ubuntu Mate or whichever flavor alongside the vanilla Unity desktop stuff. Is it as simple as that?
Before Martin chips in here,
I know what you're going to say.
I'm going to say the difference should be nothing. I should be able to do precisely what Matthew Boone is asking for. It's a brilliant idea. I want to be able to say, oh, I'd like to try Ubuntu Mate, or I'd like to try Ubuntu GNOME, just install the GNOME desktop or Mate desktop or whatever package, Budgie desktop. In practice, it doesn't work. Martin, explain why.
Well, it can work and it also can't work. So there's two types of meta package. There's one for like the whole For example, there's one called Ubuntu Mate Desktop, which is everything that constitutes Ubuntu Mate. And if you were to install that over vanilla Ubuntu, it would do things like replace the login manager, the LightDM. It would replace Unity Greeter with the GTK version. It would replace your boot animations and things like that. So there are other packages which just install the desktops, but then at that point you're getting like the upstream experience of the desktop, not the refined curated versions that like I put in effort into creating for Ubuntu Mate, and the same is true for the guys at Ubuntu Budgie and Ubuntu GNOME. So you never get quite the same experience when you install multiple versions over the top of one another, because bits clash and have to replace each other. And the other thing that happens is we all have slightly different application selections in our desktop environments. Some of the desktop environments trying to do what they can to only present their stuff in their desktop environment. So if you were to install Mate, for example, alongside Unity, when you're logged into Unity, you wouldn't see all of the Mate stuff showing up in all of the menus and the dash and the launcher and what have you. But some don't work that way. So then what you end up with is like multiple versions of text editors in the menus and multiple versions of file explorers and stuff. So it's not the best experience, unfortunately.
It should be pointed out that having to blitz my machine and reinstall it is also not the best experience.
Yes, yes.
Snappy fixes this.
That's also true. Right, and Matthew Boone emailed again.
Ubuntu on mobile is a pretty exciting idea, but having mucked around with custom Android ROMs, sending this mail from Lineage OS, it seems like we run up against this poor driver support from the chip manufacturers and this mysterious baseband that lurks somewhere in the phone. Is there any hope for getting around this? It would be great to be able to buy an old phone and slap a free OS on it the way we can with our PCs. The short answer is no. There is no hope for this.
Correct.
The closest you can get is if you can find a phone that runs Replicant.
Right, but even then, you need to find a phone that runs Replicant, take it apart, desolder parts, and then you can run Replicant. It's not even like download an image and send it over the USB cable to the phone. That doesn't work. It's painful. So, no, this is... I think it's one of those things that we can keep lobbying that free software is a great way to do things, and some of these organizations will start freeing up some of their stuff. Yep. But it's a long slog.
I have heard Todd Weaver from Purism say that they are working on a mobile device. I think it was a phone at some point. Maybe it's just a tablet now, but they have aspirations of freeing this. So I think it's a couple
have
of years out.
But
yeah,
I think. You know.
If anyone's going to have a stab at it, it's them. So yeah, keep right. an eye on them. I don't think it's going to be possible anytime soon. But
and even then, that would be one specific device which you can buy and then download and put things on. Something like the Fairphone is at the moment. The idea that you'll be able to buy any phone you like and just install an OS like you can with PCs is there is literally no industry interest in having this happen.
Yeah.
It would be nice, but people just don't want to do that.
All right, and the conditions were set many years ago for the PC architecture around the time when the PC-AT came out, and companies like Compaq were trying to create clones and they needed operating systems that ran on different machines. It was the right time for that to happen. But right now, the planets aren't aligned for this to happen. And as Stuart said, there's no corporate interest in it happening at all.
Oh, well. Anaj Agarwal emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org.
I would like to personally congratulate you as your blog, Ubuntu Podcast, has been selected by our panellist as one of the top 25 Ubuntu blogs on the web.
Well,
I'm amazed there are 25 blogs.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it's faint praise.
It does feel like you've been rather down with faint praise since you've been awarded a thing for a blog, which you aren't. And it was selected by a panelist. Not our panel or our panelists. Our panelists, singular. So there's someone sat in a room somewhere going, what are the top 25 hits on Google for the word Ubuntu?
And we're one of them.
And you're in the list. So good SEO skills. Well done.
He said you could put this badge on your website to show that you're and link it to the top 25 blogs. And I pointed out to him that while that would be very nice and it's very kind of him to supply us with this gold badge that we can put on our website, if we were to do that with every award we get, we just wouldn't have room on our website for any content. So we gracefully turned him down.
Oh, well, did he offer that you could be part of their Ubuntu web ring as well?
Yes.
Oh, well. Next, Helen Bailey emailed us.
I was looking around for various certifications that I could do that pertain to my job, which is being an IT know-it-all, and I found out I could get a Linux certification. But for whatever reason, if you look at the Deluxe Training Program, you'll see that you get a free Chromebook with the course. I don't hate Google or Chromebooks or anything, just feels like a strange thing to have on a Linux website. I mean, it's a Dell laptop. Dell offers Ubuntu 1604 LTS laptops on their website. Why not go for one of those, maybe? I know Google has a vested interest in Linux, but...
But the Chromebook is cheap, is the answer.
I think that is the exact answer.
And this is being offered by the Linux Foundation, and all they care about is the fact that Chromebooks run the Linux kernel.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you say that you get the Chromebook for free, what it means is they've bumped up the price of the course by £200 to pay for your Chromebook. They'd have to bump out by £600 to pay for even a cheap Dell laptop. They'd have to bump it up by £1,000 to pay for the snazzy new Dell Sputnik.
And also, you know, Google does subsidise the cost of the Chromebook somewhat as well, especially, I believe, around education. You'll find a lot of schools are able to provide Chromebooks for their students because of this sort of thing. So, yes, unfortunately, that's why.
Yeah. Amar posted a comment on our website.
I was an XFCE and Arch user until recently when a system malfunction tempted me to distro hop. 3 months and over 30 installs later, I zeroed in on Ubuntu Mate. For the last month, it's been rock solid. And it's a screamer on my Dell laptop. Great work by the Ubuntu Mate team, even though I'm not a fan of the green theme. Sorry.
How dare you?
I thought when he said, for the last month it's been rock solid, I thought he was going to say, and after that, it was just atrocious. But he didn't, thankfully, so that's good. Well done, Martin.
And a thumbs up for me, because I am currently on an old Dell Latitude, just the same as Amar is, running Ubuntu Mate, and it seems fine to me as well, so, you know, cheers.
Brilliant. Hack Frisee, I think that's how we're going to go with that one, also posted a comment on our website.
Who's that mentioned in this episode? That Linux YouTuber from Wales. Could you give me a link to his YouTube channel? His name is Chris Weir, W-E-I, or it might be Chris Weir. And he's Chris Weir Tech, at Chris W-E-R-E-T-E-C-H on Twitter. And we'll have a link to his YouTube channel in the show notes.
We will. And Marion posted a comment on our website.
Just one remark regarding Mate. It's not just old users using it. I was on a Fedora XFCE for the last 18 months. Just yesterday, I switched to Fedora Mate on my primary notebook after I played with the distro which will not be named on a secondary laptop for a week. All rainbows and unicorns so far.
Wow. Brilliant.
I shall pass that on to Wolfgang Ulbrich, who is the maintainer of the Fedora Mate spin. He'd be very pleased to hear that. And from Google Plus, I'd just like to say thank you to Shay Dean and Joseph Dixon for the comments on our G Plus page about the cover art for the episode titled Sulky Meek Work. And also thanks to Total OS Today for their kind words about Ubuntu Mate.
That's all for episode 6. We'll be back, by which I mean they'll be back, next week when they'll have more news, more comment and more discussion.
Awesome.
Thank you, Stuart. It's been very good having you.
No problem. Yes.
It's nice having a podcasting professional.
Well, we have to come.
And
we
you
have
as
to
well.
Come down and demonstrate to the lower orders occasionally how this stuff works.
Brilliant. Thank you for that glowing endorsement.
Never coming on again.
I imagine we'll see you at Foss Talk Live later in the
year.
Not before.
You will.
Take care. Bye-bye.
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 Here endeth the lesson.
And now, Hey Citizen and BlamePopey.com present Mycroft Sings. Dum 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 dum
dum dum dum dum dum dum dum dum dum dum dum dum dum. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Dum 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 dum. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Dum 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 dum. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Dum, 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 dum. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, him so alone. Dum, 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 dum. Don't have nobody to call my own. Dum, dum, dum. Please turn on new magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Dum 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 d